This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3091 for Monday the 8th of June 2020. Today's show is entitled Fugu Serve. It is hosted by ZenFloater2 and is about 44 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is Fugita OpenBSD server building a new Wi-Fi router server.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Well, it's been quite a while, gang, since I've made an audio. I think a little over a year. And as you know, I'm a big OpenBSD user. I like OpenBSD because it's much more secure than any other operating system that I've ever used. It also seems to run better than any other operating system I've ever used. Now, it's not the fastest operating system by any stretch. That would be a showdown probably between FreeBSD and Linux, but it is certainly the most secure, and in my opinion probably the most stable or most accurate, and that's important to me. The only other operating system I'm currently using is Triskel, and Triskel has an amazing number of capabilities for a free software operating system, but frankly the Mate desktop and everything and how Linux does things sometimes drives me nuts. It's easier to for instance edit videos and things using Triskel perhaps, but OpenBSD, you know, doesn't have access to webcams and stuff that people use to make desktop videos. Usually in my videos, I don't use a desktop cam anyway. I don't put my face on my videos. That way, people continue to watch. But at any rate, I'm recording this audio, by the way, using OpenBSD 6.7, which is just recently released. And it's the i386 version of OpenBSD, and it's on a Dell Mini 10, which in itself is probably 12, 13 years old. It has a tiny little 250 gigabyte hard drive, 1 gig of RAM. The entire thing is, frankly, very small. It has like a 10-inch screen, diagonal screen, and a smaller but not terribly hard to use keyboard. It's actually got a pretty good feel to it and trackpad with a couple of touch points. And OpenBSD seems to support it quite well, and as you can tell, I can record audio with it. I'm using Audacity right now to make this recording. And I've got the XFCE desktop set up here, and a lot of people who are ricers would poo-poo that want to use DWM or one of the other ricer desktops. But I prefer some of the old traditional 90s type desktops. In fact, this particular portable or mini notebook, it doesn't have a DVD drive in it or anything. It's just basically four USB ports, I believe, or maybe three. Yeah, three USB ports, an Ethernet jack, a mic recording jack, an earphone jack. And what else do we have here? Video out. RGB, I think, video out. And of course, a power plug connector. And What I love about the Dell Mini 10 is its tremendous battery life. I mean, this thing will last for well over 8 hours. I think I've had it on for as long as 12 hours before it ran out of batteries. So I can literally take this thing out to the park and use it for 3 or 4 hours writing stuff out in the sunlight using an Emacs or LibreOffice and just enjoy the heck out of it. In fact, I'll take it with me everywhere, poolside or when I take a bath, believe it or not. I'll sit there and listen to podcasts or watch videos. I've got Firefox on here. I also have the option of having Chromium if I want. Those are the two web browsers that OpenBSD supports. OpenBSD implements Pledge, which severely restricts the access of those two browsers, so they can't just walk off with your SSH keys or doing something bad with Java that you don't want done. So it watches out for you, and it's a really good system. I just upgraded from 6.6 to 6.7 tonight on this laptop. I've got five laptops running OpenBSD. And I just acquired a new server. My old server had been in use running OpenBSD for 13 years now, and it's starting to give out on me. It needs to be rebuilt or something. It needs a new fan. It needs a new CPU heat paste, and it needs to be scraped and cleaned out and refurbished and maybe put back online later. So what I did instead, which is the typical thing that most Americans do, instead of rebuilding it, I went out and bought a new one. And I went to Think Penguin and bought one of their, what do they call it, Penguin 9 desktops, I think it is, the number 9 version. It's got 8 gigabytes of RAM and a couple of Celeron processors, you know, two dual-core Celeron processor. And I put in a 6 terabyte hard drive in there, and I pulled the RAID array out of the old server and put it in this box that had 4 drives, so I could easily transfer the data. And one thing you learn about running OpenBSD with a fast file system is you want to have an rsync backup of your main database in case the power goes out, because sometimes you'll lose files. You know, it's not like it runs ZFS or something. However, OpenBSD does plan on implementing the Hammer 2 file system in the future once Matt Dillon over at Dragonfly finishes Hammer 2. That's still under development. So we'll have the Hammer 2 file system on OpenBSD in the next probably 5-6 years, certainly. Any rate, this is sort of a casual recording. I'm not going to be doing a lot of editing. There may be some mistakes in it as I open cans of Pepsi Zero to drink them and light cigarettes and whatnot. So it's not, this is not commercial quality for sure, but it was never intended to be. All right. Well, you know, every time you lose power, typically, when my old server would go out, I'd have to wait till I came back home again. Sometimes I'll be gone for 3 or 4 days or maybe a week working, you know, in my normal course of employment. And if the power goes out, I'm going to have to wait that long to restart the server, because typically with a fast file system, it's always the temp partition slash TMP, your temporary files, that gets corrupted because the operating system writes to it all the time. So I decided with this new system I'm going to run Fuguita on it. And you can take a look at Fuguita at fuguita.org, which is Kawamoto's website. He's a Japanese man who makes Fuguita, and it's based on OpenBSD. And basically what it is it's OpenBSD that runs from memory. It boots off either an ISO, a CD, a DVD ISO rather, and or a memory file stick that you can put on a USB, and it has memory storage and everything else. And what I've done is I've set up my server to run off of Fuguita now, so when I get my updates I'll just do them once a month. Kawamoto, or Kaw as he pronounces himself in emails, he applies patches to Figuita and republishes this image as OpenBSD patches things. So once a month, I'll just download a new image from his website if there's been changes. Typically, once a month, or maybe once every 2 months, there will be a patch from OpenBSD for some security or maintenance issue that needs to be applied. And downloading the ISO and putting it to USB stick is easy. Figuita, as I say, it stores all the ports that you add in the way of programs to hard drive storage or USB storage for reloading the next boot. So changing the image out is really just about as easy as doing a sys patch. You know, if you had an installed version of OpenBSD, you'd use sys patch to patch the unit. You don't have to download source trees from CVS and recompile the entire operating system or bits and pieces of it and reinstall it and reboot. You can just run sys patch now, and with Figuita, it's just basically download an image, put it to a USB stick, and boot it up and repopulate it with configuration files in etc, your home directory, whatever you might have in your root directory, and var, and save it off to the hard drive again for automatic reboot. So when Figuita runs, it's a, as I say, OpenBSD, it runs from memory. It runs from memory, and when the power goes out, there's nothing to corrupt. I mean, on boot up, it pulls the system into memory, and so the memory's all, everything's running in memory. So the only thing that could get corrupted are any hard drives that are mounted, and since all my hard drive volumes are over 5 terabytes in size, including the array, they're all written in a more modern version of the fast file system that has a little bit more redundancy to it. So you don't get your file system tore up and stuff destroyed as much as you used to with the fast file system version 1. Version 2 is a bit more redundant, and as I said, Hammer 2 is coming, so when Hammer 2 gets here, then I guess none of us will have to worry about that ever again. I mean, you'll be able to flip the power on and off like a madman. Anyway, with this new server, I have tested it. I've pulled the power out on it multiple times while it was writing to the hard drives, and it came right back up with just a minimal amount of FSCK blather on the screen. Didn't lose anything, so it's functionally as good as any Linux would be with, say, EXT3, I think would be a good equivalent. Not bad. I mean, you have some interaction on the screen, but it's not the end of the world. Of course, it'd be great if we had a journaled fast file system, but that's another story for another day. I think they'll probably implement Hammer 2 before they worry about that. So at any rate, I have installed Figuita on this new system, and it has a 500 gig hard drive as its main hard drive, and then the 6 terabyte drive that I said I'm using for my media storage. I have about a terabyte of information that I store on there. And I pulled the RAID array out of the old server and mounted it in the new one so that I could copy the data over to this new drive and have some redundancy that way. It used to be I just kept a USB drive that was approximately 4 terabytes in size that I could plug into my laptop, and I'd back up the server that way over the Wi-Fi, because, you know, if you do it in small increments, it's not really that big a deal. You know, you might back up for 30 minutes or something while you're home, and then it's all done. So, at any rate, the new server does have an Atheros Wi-Fi card in it with dual antennas, and it's got some pretty good coverage, and I'm using it with my Linux laptops, and it serves the house quite well. It's got a good strong transmitter, and I have it located in a room that's right next to where the telephone company brought in the DSL, since we live out in a magical forest, as you know. out in the countryside, we don't have cable out here. So anyway, I thought I would discuss what I did to set up the Wi-Fi. And for that, I have to SSH over to the server. And let me just move a terminal over here to a new spot. There we go. And we'll SSH to the server and take a look at some files. Let me do a little typing here. This Dell Mini 10 laptop I'm using with i386 BSD is a little slow, and it just takes a moment for it to get the server up. And the server's programmed. I've got it set up to launch Tmux immediately, so I have a dedicated Tmux interface that I can use to access the server. And we're in. So let's go through the configuration files. Let's start with a DHCP client if we can. DH client, I guess. The DH client. It would help if I could type. There we go. When you run Fagulita, you'll notice, and I'll provide copies of all these files. You'll find that there's a dhclient.conf file, C-O-N-F, in your Etsy directory, and I have mine set up to take a lease off of my EM0 interface, which happens to be my Ethernet port. And I have in the file a couple of items commented out: ignore domain name servers, I plan on running DNS Crypt Proxy with it later as soon as I fix some configuration issues. And I also have a supersede domain name servers set to my localhost 127.0.0.1. Both commented out because I'm still working on my DNS Crypt Proxy. I'm having a little trouble with that. But I'll iron that out because they changed a few things in the last release that I want to work around that I had running in the old server. But for now, I'm just using the ISP's DNS because it's faster, and anymore it seems like they're logging you on everything anyway, even if they say they're not logging. So I may not be implementing DNS Crypt Proxy because it seems like there's been a lot of bad actors come up and start up servers on that particular network. Anyway, in here you'll see a line that says reject 192.168.1.1 with a colon. This is so that the DH client, when it comes up and it gets a lease off of my ISP, won't get a lease off of itself, because it's going to have a DHCP server of its own to serve out leases to all the laptops around this house and cell phones and things that need internet access. And if you don't put that in there, then you'll just end up getting a lease from yourself and you'll have no internet connection when you boot up. So that's never something that you want to do. Some of this stuff is live examples. I won't be editing it, so you'll get to see how I actually run it. But there's also the DHCPD CONF file, and I'm going to provide an example of that. And this is our actual DHCP server file, and at the top it has declared the subnet that we're running 192.168.1.0 with a net mask of 3255s and a .0 at the end of that. and a pointer to our optional router 192.168.1.1 for outgoing. Has a range that it's going to supply of dot 40 through dot 190. So those will be the I think that we call this Class C in-house IP numbers, and you'll see a list of different computers with their hardware internet addresses and fixed addresses that it has assigned to various computers around the house. You could use this as an example. For instance, there's my Dell Mini 10 that has a permanent IP of 192.168.1.200 when I log in, listed there. And I give it a name and a hardware Ethernet series of numbers to match the Ethernet hardware identification for each Wi-Fi adapter. And you can see I've got quite a few computers that log into this thing. The next file we're going to look at is dhcpd.interfaces, and basically all that's in that file is the Wi-Fi interface of the server, which is ATHN0. It's an Atheros Wi-Fi host AP adapter, which is the one that I think Penguin seems to use the most of. I've got two or three of their computers around the house here, and they use that quite a bit. Let's see if I can get this. I'm having a little trouble getting the terminal to release this. Let me pause my recording for just a second while I work this out. Okay, we're back now. Now, we're going to cover in the etc directory the host name files, and in OpenBSD, you set up a host name dot interface name for every interface that you want to program. And the first one we're going to look at is host name dot ATHN0, which covers our Wi-Fi interface. And this is what brings the Wi-Fi card up into host mode. And you can see in here I have an INET set up of 192.168.1.5. 3255 and a 0 for my range through 192.168.1.255. So it actually has a wider range than DHCP actually covers, I believe, for the system. Media is auto select. Media opt is host AP. It's set to channel 4. It's got the WPA interface turned on. Network ID is FuguServe. And then my WPA key, which is my actual key for my Wi-Fi, I put that in here, which I'll change on the text that I put up on the website here for this recording, and then the word up to bring that interface up. The next file that we set up is hostname dot bridge, B-R-I-D-G-E 0, and this is our bridge interface. And here we're adding a interface called vtether 0, which is when I created a virtual interface. EM 0 has been added, ATHN 0 is added. Block non-IP on vtether 0, EM 0, and ATHN 0, or block non-IP, I should say. And then up on that, the next file is hostname.em0, and there we have a DHCP and INET6 auto configuration. And then finally, the hostname.vtether0 file, which has a range of INET 192.168.1.1, 3255s, and then 192.168.1.255. I have for the entire 192 range that we're going to be commingling here in our virtual interface. Now, let's see. Now the pf.config is rather complicated. At the top of it, we have interfaces defined vtether, em0, and athn0 combined. And we have a list of broken interfaces that we're going to probably ban somewhere down here in the script. Yeah, we do bring them in the script. We also declare a table called brute force that's a persistent table that we're going to use to block out SSH attackers, because SSH is the only port that's open on this interface to the outside internet, outside world. And we start off by setting a block policy drop on everything. And then we set interface egress. We set skip on low, LO0. We match in all scrub, no DF, random ID, max MFS, and 1440. Now, it would help if you got a book on the PF firewall. I'm not going to try to explain all that in this audio. I mean, this took me quite a long time to collect from various places on the internet and sort out with the book, and I'm still working on it. I mean, you could spend a lifetime studying the PF firewall. But anyway, I just provide this as an example for what I set up, and you can see I have commented out in the middle there my block on any UDP for port 53, which is a part of my my setup for DNS crypt proxy that I'm working on. Anyway, I've been using this firewall for 12 years at least, and that's one of the great things about OpenBSD is, you know, their configuration files and stuff, they don't change really that often. I mean, they improve the software, but they don't redesign everything like Linux does to where you have to relearn everything under the sun to get anything to work. As what happened with when they introduced systemd, or they went from IP routes to IP tables, so on and so forth. You know, over time, you had to learn a whole new way of either running firewalls or running your init system or something else, you know. And I don't like that. Anyway, this particular configuration had been running with the DNS crypt proxy for like 12 years and working fine, and I'm just trying to iron some bugs out of it that I'll get back with another audio in the future when I get it perfected. But typically I like to run DNS crypt proxy, and I'll discuss the changes that I made in the future to improve the firewall. But anyway, I'm not going to go over this firewall too much because it would be boring, and a lot of people wouldn't understand it. You need to get a book on PF, the PF firewall, and study this if you really want to follow me on it. But as you can see, this has been one that's I've had in the development now for a good decade, and it's been running really fine. In fact, it's running right now. And the way this is set up is, if you attack my firewall unsuccessfully or reach my max connections, you will be put in the brute force table and banned. And I have accidentally managed to ban myself on a couple of occasions, so I know it works. Anyway, the command pfctl, or pf control, is the way you take IP numbers in and out of that table if you want to unban yourself. So, but you'd have to be at the console to do it. But at any rate, in running this for a dozen years, no one has managed to get into the server at all. We need to cover the... there are some variables that need to be set in syscontrol.config to enable forwarding. And I'll include a copy of my setup of that. But important is the net.inet.ip.forwarding equals 1. And they also have a net.inet6.ip6 forwarding, which I have turned off because I'm not doing IP6. And net.inet.ip redirect equals 0. And I got kernel buff cache percent at 50%, and net inet ip ifq max length 1024, net inet tcp dot mss dflt equals 1440. Mock dep dot allow aperture equals 2, and mockdeck late action equals 0. All of these are covered in the man pages. OpenBSD has some fantastic man pages on syscontrol and all the variables, and you can actually go through and pick out each one of these variables, but the IP forwarding one definitely has to be set to 1, and it wouldn't hurt if you tuned some of the other ones. Anyway, I provided this as an example. Now let's see, the rc.conf.local I have set up to launch several things as well, and we've got check quotas equal to no, DHCP flags set up for vtether 0, which means that's where it's going to launch the DHCPD server from. That's where it'll be listening from, I guess. NTB flags, in other words, the network time protocol has been launched. There's my package scripts for DNS procs, DNS crypt proxy, which is commented out at the moment. Sound IO flags equals no, or SND IO flags equals no, excuse me, and unbound flags equals basically hash hash. Or quote quote, I should say. And that starts unbound, which reminds me, we need to cover unbound, and I'll provide my example of that. It's fairly simple. It's under var unbound etsy unbound conference, CONF, and I'll provide that. And hopefully I didn't miss anything. I think that's about all you have to get it going. Of course, if your server has different network interfaces, you'll have to audit the PF scripts and the various host name files, and perhaps DHCP files. You'll have to edit all the files to cover the changes in your network cards. But I just set this Fagulita server up, the new one, up today, and I've been testing it, and I'm really happy with it. The performance is quite a bit better than OpenBSD spinning from a rusty hard drive. Even though I am using a rusty hard drive to store my data, the operating system is great, and I've added a minimal set of packages to it. Faguta also, if you install it to a local hard drive there on the server for quick booting from a USB key, you can go into the D section, the D partition, which Faguta should set up when it creates a new drive for you as part of the USB FADM command that you read about on their website. And you can go into the No Ask section and edit that file and uncomment out the appropriate lines to get it to auto boot. So when the power goes out, what the server does is it'll auto on and it brings Faguta up from the first 500 gig hard drive. You know, it boots it up from there. And Faguta has the option of creating an old net BIOS, standard BIOS boot configuration, or EFI, UEFI I mean, or a hybrid, which is a combination of the two, which is what I'm using. And this server will boot UEFI, but I've got it set up to where it just boots, you know, from standard BIOS, because frankly I hate UEFI. I do. But it's nice to know that I have the option of putting it on a UEFI server and it will boot from it and run. Now the other great thing about this is, since I have this configuration, everything, all my programs, my SSH keys and everything are set up excuse me, on a USB key disk. In other words, it's an exact copy of what I have on the server installed to the main 500 gig drive, you know, or the working drive for the operating system. I can take it to any other server, you know, somebody's office, somebody's house, and install this and just change a few configuration files and have them set up in a server in less than an hour, you know, and show them how to maintenance it. Because, like I said, maintaining one of these is just as easy as downloading a new image from the Faguta website as they provide patches, and just copying a few of these configuration files into it. Because, like I said, the configuration files, mine haven't changed in over 12 years, with the exception of the DNS Crypt Proxy, because they keep, you know, that they keep redesigning DNS Crypt Proxy, and they keep coming up with new DNS Crypt Proxy files, server files, because servers come and go, you know, and you have to keep following that. I mean, that's been sometimes a real constant source of irritation for me to keep that going, and you know, keep it with performance. You know, performance is the issue, I think, for me. But if you run it like I've suggested and just use your IP servers, natural DNS, the thing runs like a bullet. I mean, it's really very fast. So anyway, I'll copy these files out to the website so you can just have a look at it and have a go at it. And like I said, you won't have to worry about corrupting any of your file system with Faguta and OpenBSD if the power goes out. Because when the power comes back on, the server will auto start, which most of the new ones do now. You know, you don't have to be there to push a power on button, and it'll just load that stuff up from the first hard drive there, the small hard drive that they give you, or USB stick, if you've got it set up to boot from a USB stick. Put it into memory, and then it'll be sitting there waiting for you to log on so you can mount your main hard drive where your data is, and, you know, do a file corruption check on it. And maybe restore from a backup if you happen to have a backup array like I do. You know, I'm using my old drives as the backup array right now. So for the new drive. So if anything happens, I can just use an rsync backup and do a hash check on it to make sure that all the files are correct, which takes a little longer, but that's good, because, you know, someday soon we'll be into the Hammer 2 file system and I won't even have to do that. I won't have to worry about it. And maybe I can just make backups to a USB drive again, like I had been doing, and carry them with me in the car in case the house burns down or something happens. A tornado wipes out the house and kills my family and everything while I'm gone. Hopefully not. But at any rate, it works great, and my entire family loves it. Especially this new server, it's got a really great Wi-Fi card to it. It's It's so much better than a damn store-bought Wi-Fi router. Plus, OpenBSD does packet inspection and everything else in addition to providing that fantastic firewall for you. And, you know, I just sleep a lot better at night. I used to run Slackware servers for years, and I'd run it with Fail2Ban. And, you know, Fail2Ban is almost like a weekly hassle to keep up with the latest attacks. It is, because there's people coming up with new things, ping of death and all these other things that affect Linux. Even on the old Linux Action Show, I remember Chris Fisher running a script where he gained root access in less than 30 seconds on his box, and he just showed how that script worked right there in the video. And I understand that there's like 6 or 7 scripts floating around there that will exploit the Linux kernel in the same manner. Not to mention the fact that we still have the Spectre problem, and OpenBSD resolved that by simply turning off the symmetrical SMT, I guess it is, within their kernel. So I don't have to worry about that. It really is the most secure operating system in the world. I don't think anybody makes a commercial operating system that comes close to it. Certainly not. I mean, OpenBSD also has currently a floating port system that's just like Arch Linux, in that as soon as a new version of a particular program comes out, they'll throw it out there, like particularly in the server side, and also with certain desktop applications, they'll throw it out there. You know, and they release every May and every November, I believe. And so you get these updates to certain packages during the entire time, which is something you don't even get with Ubuntu. So I think when they get the Hammer 2 file system in here, I think more people will probably start using OpenBSD, because frankly, for most of us, it's a better system. It just is. And it has more modern software than Debian, for sure. So I've been slowly pushed away from Linux in the last 15 years, going to OpenBSD, and I'm quite happy with what I'm seeing. They also have the ability to do a sys upgrade command from the root, which is how I upgraded this little Dell Mini 10 I'm talking to you off of, from OpenBSD 6.6 to 6.7. So I don't even have to reinstall the entire operating system. It just does it for you automatically, like as if you were using Ubuntu almost. Really quite better than it was 12 years ago, where if you wanted to upgrade in place, basically you had to download the CVS copy of the source image and recompile your entire operating system, and then go through and of course edit all your configuration files, which is another plus for Fugulita, because you did have to occasionally edit configuration files to get new options. And it makes it so much easier when I go to 6.7 version of Fugulita. I'm on 6.6 right now with this server. I'll just go through and read each configuration file that Kaw puts on there to see if there's any new options, and go through the man pages, you know, as I set up the new server. You know, I can do that in QEMU and actually boot up a copy of Fugulita 6.7 when it comes out, and QEMU, and hand edit all that stuff, and set up my own USB key right on the server, and then reboot into that USB key and restall it to the hard drive, and I can be on 6.7 in less than 2 hours. You know, the biggest deal is making sure you have all your configuration files edited properly, which is one of the big complaints I think most people have about Ubuntu that are power users, especially the server, is how it handles the updates to all the various server files, because in Linux it's the changes are much more severe. You know, you really have to keep on top of configuration files when you go from, say, 1604 to 1804, or whatever you're going to, 2004. I mean, you just never know what they're going to do next, and Debian is particularly deadly on that. But yeah, I'm really very happy with this, and I'm going to go ahead and conclude and wish you all a happy day. It's good. good to be able to make an audio again, and we'll make one again soon, hopefully. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.